A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, somebody. This is Nina Turner, and I want to tell you about Power Hour with yours truly, Nina Turner. The new weekly program I'm hosting for TYT. Every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, I'll be bringing the heat for an hour filled with power. We'll speak truth to power. We'll talk about how to fight the power. And we'll plan how to leverage the power that we the people have. This show is for TYT members only. But for a limited time, we'll be making the first half an hour available to everyone. Then the second half an hour, just for members. For access to the full show, be sure to sign up for TYT membership at tyt.com/join today.
All right, the Power Hour with Nina Turner. The Nina Turner, how you doing?
Good, Cenk. How are you today?
I'm good. I saw you on CNN kicking ass. We did a story on it. I feel even better. I was telling folks, I remember those lines. I remember from last week's Power Hour.
Oh, yeah. We tested them out on Power Hour first. And it was quite amazing. I'm a little jet lagged because I was just getting in. I just got in at midnight, which was early this morning, technically. And then I had my CNN hit at 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that was a lot.
Yeah. No, I'm surprised you're still standing. But actually, I'm not surprised. You're the Nina Turner. So you went to Brighton, UK, and that's actually our story of the week.
Yes.
Let's roll it. I like it. All right. So, Nina, why did you go to the UK? What was it about? And tell us. And then you interviewed Jeremy Corbyn. And what was that about?
I did. So I was invited to the UK to be in solidarity with the Postal Workers Union, the CWU. And the people I went to be with, it was the Labour Party's convention. So for those of us who understand the political convention type, similar to the conventions that a Republican or a Democrat would have, but it was Labour Party's convention. And so the left wing of that particular party definitely see me as a shero and invited me to come in along with, so it was CWU, and it was also the Tribune magazine, which is a very leftist magazine, probably in line with Jacobin, if people want to think of it that way. And Jacobin was involved too, so it was just this beautiful melding, but it was by invitation. Long story less long, they said, S&T, we need you to come here, we need your fire. We need you to motivate our people both in this party and also motivate the trade union. And their postal service is not nationalized. And they're fighting to nationalize the CWU. And the reverse is happening here. We are nationalizing. The Republicans are fighting to privatize ours.
Yeah, now that's ironic for sure, because they have not only nationalized healthcare insurance, they have nationalized healthcare, period. And so they lead the world in nationalized healthcare, and they haven't even nationalized post service, and that's about the only thing we've nationalized in America. So
that's it. The Royal Mail is called, and just to be there, the Secretary General leads the Postal Services, the leader of the CWU, David Ward is his name. And it was really just a tremendous opportunity to fellowship, sistership with them. So not only did I get a chance to speak at a major rally side by side with Jeremy Corbyn and other leaders, I also had the opportunity to talk one-on-one or the Secretary General and myself with some of his leadership as well. So it was really, really good. I did a lot of media interviews with leftist media, and the struggle is the same. You know, sometimes we think that we are the only ones enduring things, whether it's you know, workers' rights, increasing the minimum wage, for example, they have the same struggles over there that the corporatist wings of the parties, the corporatists themselves not wanting to pay people a living wage. The struggle is global, it is universal, international, pick your word, but it is that, and it is important that the members know that they are over there fighting some of the same battles we are too. Out right outside my hotel, Jink, were homeless people, tents, you know, around the hotel in this seaside city. So the struggle is indeed universal, it's global. And yeah, we have to find solidarity, I believe, with working people all over the world.
Yeah, we got a seaside city here called LA that also has a lot of homeless folks. So
that's right.
Same problems everywhere. In fact, I want to go to portions of that interview and get your reaction. So let's take a look at the first clip.
Okay.
What has happened to humanity in this? Because people like to have a feel-good factor about the history.
Of course.
They like to say, we saved these refugees. We saved the refugees from Nazi Germany. We saved the freed slaves and so on and so on. The reality is, history is going to judge the early part of the 21st century very, very harshly. At a time of a crisis of 70 million refugees around the world, growing quite quickly, victims of war, oppression,
climate chaos,
climate refugees.
Yeah.
What are we doing? In Britain, we're sending vessels out into the English Channel to keep refugees away. Austria and other countries put up barbed wire fences to keep them out and electronic surveillance. Camps are set up which don't look that different to prison camps on the borders of Europe. And the poorest countries don't have the numbers like Europe. They have 10 and 100 times the numbers. Bangladesh has 1 million refugees from Myanmar. Where's the support?
So, Nina, your thoughts on that part of the conversation?
I mean, very timely to talk about that with Mr. Jeremy Corbyn and the concern that he has. And it's something, Cenk, that you and I, we were just talking about this last week. The weight of this is that the human experience all over the world is pretty much the same, and issues of this magnitude. And to have Jeremy Corbyn lay out and say clearly that we are going to be, history is going to judge the 21st century harshly, is real, because we are treating people around the world as if they are expendable. We are ignoring set histories. I mean, at a certain point in history, in world history, the sun never set on the British Empire. Wonder why imperialism, colonialism, that was happening in this country. Same thing, the taking of the Native Americans' land and then enslaving Africans and then their descendants for generations. We saw what was happening to Haitian immigrants, old enough to remember that, because that just happened. And a lot of the immigrants that are coming back and forth, no matter where they're going, to the UK or coming to the United States of America, there's some push and pull variables. Some of it is famine. A lot of it does have to do with climate chaos itself. But when you look at famine, you look at opportunities, you look historically how that the ecosystem, if you will, of that particular nation was upset, and which imperial nation upset the ecosystem that is driving people either away, like pushing them to another country or pulling them somewhere else. So it was just to talk to him about how serious this is and that it is important that we all care about it and deal with it globally was important.
Right. And by the way, that accumulation of wealth that was created through force created poverty in the Southern Hemisphere, which then also leads to the refugee crisis that we're seeing today. So we started that ticking time bomb in the first place. And so we can't now wash our hands of it and say, oh, let's just build a bigger wall and keep them out. We have a certain responsibility for that in the West. So now I want to go to a second clip from the interview here. Let's check that out.
Acknowledge this climate crisis. I acknowledge this climate change going on. I acknowledge that we have to do something about it, and dramatic. We have to build a green industrial revolution.
Yes.
If we approach environmental issues on the basis of saying you should eat organic healthy food, you should breathe clean air, you're not going to get a hearing for a lot of people that can't afford to live in a neighborhood that has clean air, can't afford to buy organic food, and have no choice in these matters, and you're accusing them of causing pollution.
Sure.
And so it is about a green industrial revolution that protects and extends jobs whilst converting industries into something more useful. So we're working with shop stewards, trade union people and so on how you build up an environmental basis of your campaigning at the workplace. If you don't involve working class communities and trade unions in a green industrial revolution, you will not achieve change.
You know, Nina, I want to ask your reaction to that clip about the substance, but as I was watching it, I thought, you know, historians might look back at that interview and think, those are two of the most important leftists in the world sitting there having a conversation. And that's pretty cool. But yes, your thoughts on that particular clip.
Very cool. The way he connected and at their conference, at their convention, you know, the policy agenda, Green New Deal, was passed. And the points that he was making about the connection between the policy notion itself and where working class people fit, that they are not separate and apart from the policy, they are central to the policy, really was speaking my love language. Because a lot of times as electeds or people who are in the policy making business think through these things, they often leave the very people who are at the center out of the conversation. And what Jeremy Corbyn was laying out there is that you're never going to get anywhere with this agenda but for the centering of trade unionists, the centering of working people. Also, shifting the burden of this problem, of this conundrum that has been created, from blaming the people who are the most oppressed to looking deeply and really taking responsibility for why it was caused. And do people have a right to clean water, clean air, and clean food? Absolutely, they do.
Yeah. It's the story of the week because it really shows the solidarity throughout the whole world for people who are thinking the right way and are often out of power because power privileges more power. And so, but before we go to the last clip, I want to go to our audience for a second. What's the antimatter? Just wrote in more Nina. earlier, we had another member write in that's not here anymore, but saying that guy you're up against on CNN, not having a good day.
I was gentle too. That was jet lag, Nina Turner.
Yeah. I agree. Still not a good day for him. So what's the antimatter also wrote in, and the Brits invented global capitalism. Let's not forget it was called the triangular trade. It's a good point.
Hello.
And we in America rebelled not just against the British Empire, but against their companies in specific. The British East India Company, it was driving us so mad, we did a revolution. That's whose tea we threw into the Boston Harbor. And then finally, Sexy Speed Racer has a suggestion. Nina, maybe we should start using the term piratize instead in place of privatize, because that's more accurately describes the result of 99% of the time when the public assets are put into private or pirate hands. Okay.
Very good. Oh my God, the members, you always say this, Jenk, and I gotta agree. The members are stunningly smart.
Yeah. No, I love having such a smart audience. It's great.
Yeah. Oh my God, look, I got me some new talking points for my next hit on TV.
All right, sounds good. All right, let's take a look at the last clip with in between you and Corbyn.
The late, great Bob Crow, he was General Secretary of the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union, and he was a huge figure and dominated his union in a good way. And he said, we fight every struggle. We don't win every struggle, and we lose some. But I can guarantee how you can lose every struggle. Don't fight at all.
Don't fight at all.
Just abdicate from the field, and you'll make sure you always lose.
Wow.
How were our unions built? How was slavery ended?
The fight.
How was the Civil Rights Act got? in the USA.
The fight.
How was the National Health Service got here? Yeah. All these achievements, all the independent struggles, how were they achieved? By people sitting back saying, well, don't dabble in that, can't happen.
So the moral of the story is we keep fighting no matter what.
Yeah.
We're going to win some, we're going to lose some, but ultimately.
So, Nia, that was powerful. Tell us more what you thought about that part of the conversation.
Yeah, it just reminded me, I mean, Mr. Corbett and I were on a program together for the Tribune Magazine rally. And part of my remarks was about keep going. You know, that was the refrain of my speech. And I took it very much from a quote from the great, great Harriet Tubman. I mean, I don't know how many I want to put 100 greats in front of her name, but the Moses of Black people, as she was describing what it will take to continue to fight for liberation, and that no matter, I'm paraphrasing her, but no matter what the power structure throws at you at that time, she was talking about slavery and freedom and really physically running towards that freedom. So she said, you know, if you hear the dogs, you know, if you hear the shouting in the woods, keep going. Don't ever stop. You know, if you want to taste the freedom, keep going. And that really was my refrain. And then for Mr. Corbin, through our conversation, even that, he talked about hope. We both talked about hope and how powerful that is. And so that reflection, that conversation just reminded me of how history is informative to how we fight in this moment. It's not something that is detached from this moment. It is very much the motivating ingredient for the moments, especially when you're fighting for something that's bigger than yourself. And just when I was listening to, I mean, I had goosebumps and I had that, you know, that amen moment, even though I didn't say it every time, but I'm doing that call and response that is very much a part of Black church tradition. Or when you really feel in what somebody's saying and you want to acknowledge it, but I was keeping myself under, you know, under control in that moment. But that to me was one of the best parts of the interview, Jake. And it reminds, you know, there's a labor leader that another leader told me about. His name is Tony Benn, and he was the labor MP from 1960 to 1980s. And he said these words, there is no final victory, just as there is no final defeat, just the same battle to be fought over and over again. So toughen up, bloody toughen up. And that's it.
100%. If there's anything that describes TYT over the last 20 years is keep going. Okay.
Keep going.
You're about to run out of money, but keep going. Okay.
Keep going. And you did that. And thanks to members, like the members we are with tonight who helped TYT keep going, and we just owe them such a debt of gratitude.
Yeah, 100%. Nobody thinks you could make it. Keep going. Nobody thinks you could win elections. Keep going.
Keep going.
Nobody believes in Justice Democrats. Keep going.
Keep going. That's it.
I love it. I love it. All right. Now, let's move on. Let's do the hero of the week. So, Nina, who do you have for Hero of the Week?
Oh, the one and only Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who leads the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And I would love for the team to put up her tweet that just really highlights the fact that she made it very clear that the progressives were not going to move. A deal's a deal. We don't pass the infrastructure bill without passing the Build Back Better Act. Investing in childcare, climate action, paid leave, housing, healthcare, education, and a roadmap to citizenship. Let's get this done and deliver for the people. Amen, Congresswoman. Jing, I want to hear how you feel about it, but I was so excited to see the progressives flex that muscle on behalf of the people and say, you know what? We got to have both of these things and we not moving. We will not be moved.
Yes. No, look, Nina, I think it's historic. I was saying on the show today, I don't ever remember in 25 years of covering politics, progressives being able to affect a vote this clearly and holding the line. Because so bullied by not just Democratic leadership and corporate Democrats in general, but also the corporate media. And now Look, I got to go back to Cori Bush on the Capitol steps, because I think that's what showed them the world doesn't end when you do it. Okay, if you fight back, they were led to believe, oh my God, it's an act of betrayal of Mama Bear and you can't do it and it's outrageous and you have to always agree with Democratic leadership, etc. And when she showed, I just did it, what now? And it worked for a time. I think that it gave strength to the rest of them, including Jayapal, who on many occasions has told progressives to trust leadership. And here she's saying, no, this is the time. This is when we make our stand. And they're making a hell of a stand.
They are. The Congresswoman Jayapal is such a diplomat. So I think that's her default first. And you can't, there's nothing wrong with that, because she's negotiating in good faith, only to find out that these other folks are not negotiating in good faith. And I do agree with you 150%, Cenk, that what Congresswoman Cori Bush was able to do, she encouraged their courage in many, many ways. And it has been a ripple effect. And it's yet another reminder that there is such a thing as the power of one. The power of one is so important. You just need sometimes just one person to just make the step, make the move, believe, not relent. And great things will happen. Now, yeah, there will be consequences, no doubt. And we get that, especially when you're on a justice journey that upsets the status quo, that changes the way systems ordinarily will operate. Of course, it's going to bump back. None of these battles are ever easy, but these types of consequences are definitely worth it. And I'm just beaming, so proud of the progressives in that Congress for showing that they were duly elected, just like those moderates and corporatists.
Yeah, so I'm curious what you think is going to ultimately happen here. But before you get to that, let me read one comment that's relevant here. Ed from YouTube Super Chat said, just Democrats need volunteers, join today in phone bags so we can defeat corporate politics. Ed wrote that in the middle of the first show because we're so energized by the fight back from these Just Democrats. Nina was also a Just Democrat. But I brought that up here in this context because Pramila Jayapal chose to be a Just Democrat after she had already won. The organization did not exist when she first ran. And she chose to do it as an incumbent, full well knowing that the group was primarying incumbent Democrats. And I don't want you to underestimate that act of courage. And she thought about it, she deliberated and actively chose to do that. And it was strength and courage and leadership in that regard. So, but Nina, now I want to turn back around and ask on this issue. So we got the two bills, nobody's budging. It looks like, they're not going to pass that. I keep calling it $1 trillion, but it's not. It's $550 billion or $500 trillion. Infrastructure package, that's the corporate back one. They're not going to be able to pass it because the progressives have blocked it. And then you got the $3.5 trillion one in Manchin and Sinema are blocking that for now. Any sense of how this ends?
No, I mean, it's a wild card happening here. We're at a standoff and we will see. I just hope that the progressives do not blink first, no matter what, because yeah. This is long overdue, Cenk, and we all know that even this is inadequate. Let's be honest. And this is inadequate. And the fact that we're cheering this on shows how sad of a position that we're actually in this nation. The investment should be much, much bigger than what it is right now. This is the compromise position, and the progressives got to hold strong no matter what.
Yeah, let me show one last thing. It's from another TYT contributor and Washington Bureau Chief of The Intercept, Ryan Grimm. And he showed how intensely popular this bill is. So when they explained the different provisions in the bill, child tax credit, the Medicare provisions, climate change, etc., a Pew poll has it at a +24 margin. But wait till you get a load of this. Fox News at +17, Navigator Research at +42, Data for Progress at +32. And as we showed you earlier in the show, in West Virginia, it's got an 80% approval rating, which is just absolutely stunning. And so I used to say on the show for so long, if you can't hold the line at 80%, which is where we are on so many issues, then you really can't hold the line. And in this case, they did. And now they've isolated Manchin and Sinema. And it looks like they're the ones blocking unity, along with a couple of corporate Democrats in the House. And that's a beautiful thing. I've never seen it flip like this, where the corporate Democrats are on the hot seat for not bringing unity. So actually, one last question about that. Did progressives do a really good job here, even in the transition, when Bernie's team was brought in after Biden had won, to bring the two sides together, in making the Biden agenda progressive enough so that the end game would have Manchin and Sinema as the ones blocking unity rather than progressives? You see what I'm saying?
I do. I'm not so sure they knew that that was what the end game was going to be, but that is where we are. And, you know, just even when, you know, Senator came out and it became public that they had this meeting and all of the progressives, or many of the progressives, are on the line together and they're talking about, I'm not moving, I'm not budging. And Senator Sanders is saying to the House of Representatives, don't, you know, I've encouraged my colleagues, don't move. I'm paraphrasing them. But the fact that they are in sync like this, Cenk, they can do this on so many more issues of consequence. And you and I have talked about that both publicly and also privately as well, that this is the way you leverage power on behalf of the people. I mean, matter of fact, one of the questions I got on CNN today, which was, you know, if the progressives agree with this stuff, why would they, you know, why would they hold it up? And they're holding it up to get more for the American people. So I'm loving this. You know, I don't want this to end.
I said last thing, but you reminded me of the clips that we have from your CNN appearance. And they were so good, I just want to play one. So guys, bring up one of them and let's show everybody and then react to it.
Sometimes during Christmas, something magical happens.
Hey, Cricket customers. The Max with Ads plan is included with the Cricket $60 unlimited plan at no additional cost. And this holiday season, Max is the one to watch when you're feeling festive.
Son of a nutcracker!
Cozy up to all the holiday classics, like Elf, 8-Bit Christmas, and the Harry Potter 8 film collection. Just log in with your Cricket username and password to experience Max on all your favorite devices. Phone plan streams and standard definition programming subject to change. Fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See CricketWireless.com for details.
It's always curious when people want to know how you're going to pay for something when it's going to help Main Street and help people in neighborhoods. But when it comes to allowing the wealthiest people in this country to get away with not paying taxes, when it comes to endless spending on wars, nobody ever asks how much does this cost. Both Senator Joe Manchin and also Senator Sinema should absolutely tell the American people what they want them to cut. Do they want them to cut the expansion of Medicare that increases access to vision, dental, and hearing? Do they want them to cut child care? What do they want them to cut? Let's go on and be bold and lay it on the line and let the American people know that they are answering first and foremost to their owner donors and not the people that they serve. And by the way, Arizona and West Virginia are two of the poorest states in the United States of America, and the people of those states deserve better than what they're getting right now from their two senators.
Owner donors. You said it last week. You said it on the air there. I'm surprised they didn't have more of a reaction to that. Because I think they were like, wait, what did she just say? And how are you going to pay for that on defense? And what are you going to cut? It's just brilliant.
And that was me jet lagged.
So let me ask you something that I know how I do it, but the audience might not know. And this is part of like the point here for us to share some of this stuff. So when you're about to go on an appearance like that, you don't yet know the questions that he's going to ask you, but you obviously you know the topic. So do you prepare those points ahead of time and think, okay, I'm going to hit this first, this second, et cetera?
It just depends. I got to tell you this morning, no. you and I are pros at this. We've been doing this for a long time, but you got to train. Still, you have to train. That's live TV, real time. And you can't take nothing back once you done put it out there. You kind of think through a little bit what you want to say, but maybe not necessarily how you're going to say it. And then it comes to you. I mean, that's how it happens for me. And because I've been in training for so long, the owner donor is something natural that I say now, because it is true. These politicians are bought and sold. But no, you just kind of think about, I want to hit this point, but you're never certain exactly how you're going to say it.
Okay. Yes, now I got an update here that I want to read you guys. It's from Manu Raju of CNN, not a member, although you never know. It turns out White House aides Brian Deese, Susan Rice, and Shwanza Goff are now in the Senate as they try to see if they can find a deal between Democratic leadership and Manchin and Sinema on framework on larger bill that could be signed off on by progressives ahead of infrastructure vote in the House. I don't love that update. I think that's interesting. But like, so they're trying to say, okay, we're going to get Manchin and Sinema to give a hard promise on what the structure is. Now go ahead and vote on the other bill. I don't think so. What do you think?
No. Yeah, no, I want to hear what you think. I do not because I'm old enough to remember that Manchin agreed with the two-step process they were using right now. He agreed on it and then he reneged. So I don't trust that. And why are they constantly centering Manchin and Sinema? Jink, to me, in many ways, and I would love to know what the members think, they're being rewarded. You know, their name is being used over and over again. They're raising money. They're raising their profile. They are being put forward as if they have all the power. And so until you go and kiss they ring or kiss they behind, you can't get nothing done. That troubles me.
Yeah. And they asked you about it on CNN and you're more diplomatic about it. But I mean, I just would say flat out, I don't trust Manchin or Sinema. Period. I don't trust them. So if they say, oh yeah, trust me, I'll vote for something like that later, my answer would be a hard no. They haven't earned our trust in any way, shape or form. I don't believe they'll stick to a deal at all. And you know, they say goofy things in Washington like, well, are you saying I'm not a man of my word? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. And what's the consequence if they don't follow through on their word? There's a big consequence for the American people who need these policies to pass. There are not many consequences except at the ballot box. And I have not seen an appetite by Dems to go in and primary these two.